Okay. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is 6:01, and it is the 14th, Monday the 14th of December, 2020, and this is the Town of Curry Beach regular Town Council meeting. To begin this evening, Councilman Ellen, would you please help us with the invocation?
Sir, please join me in prayer. Father, thank you for every seat that has been filled here today. For each mind and heart that fills the presence of this room, we thank you. Only you truly know what we are setting out to accomplish today. We have an idea, a vision, hints, and daily instructions. We have talent, abilities, and time to work. However, only you can see in perfect detail the end of every beginning. Every project, every season, every life. Nothing is ever in vain, or even mistakes and missteps are used for good. Bless this meeting today, all those present, as well as the lives of those we will encounter afterwards. Ready us to make every moment count. Amen.
Pledge of Allegiance, please rise. Pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Approval of the consent agenda items, gentlemen. Do I have any recommended changes to the consent agenda?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make a motion to adopt the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Approval, adoption of the normal agenda. So we have the agenda as published. Are there any recommended changes to the regular agenda?
One question. Mr. Attorney, were we supposed to have on the change to for the contract?
I kind of left that up to you. And
so that should have been me. Then I'd like to add under new business to talk about a stormwater contract for behind sellers.
Okay.
I'd like to check with Mandy about one thing. The two items that need to be done on that, if you move forward with it, is adopting the resolution that
that's right.
exempts it and just move.
So all I'm going to ask is for item one for $7,000, because that's what, talking with LDSI, we believe Matsu needs. So we don't need the entire contract. Does that make it where we don't need that for just the $7,000?
Well, that's such a technical question, because I don't know if that is LDSI going to treat that as a separate contract.
That's what we talked to them about when I talked to them.
See, my point is this: you're prepared to exempt the entire contract, but paper-wise, you're not prepared to exempt one part of it as a new contract, because I haven't even seen that new contract.
So I guess my question is, do we need to put this on the council agenda if we're going to talk about stormwater as a new business item, so that's what I'm going to propose to the agenda. We can talk about it then, and that gives you time to think about it.
No, well, my answer, I appreciate that, but the bottom line is this. The statute allows you to exempt an agreement. It doesn't allow you to exempt part of an agreement. You've also indicated that if you do part of that agreement, that LDSI is probably going to treat it as a separate agreement. If they treat it as a separate agreement, going back to the statute, you would then exempt that particular agreement, that new separate agreement. The resolution that we've got drafted
is for the entire agreement. I understand.
So if you want to put awarding, exempting and awarding to the January meeting, figuring that LDSI will get you a new proposal for that 7,000 segment, then you could do that.
Well, that's low enough. We don't, it doesn't matter anyway, right? That's not contracting above the limit. That's where the issue was, part of the issue.
No, these are not procurement limits. This is a particular statute that deals with requiring an RFQ anytime you hire engineers, surveyors, or architects.
Okay, I understand now.
Okay, so that was not an agenda-specific discussion, but it was a discussion to determine if we wanted to change
exactly.
The agenda.
So now right. I would ask council to add section 10.5 under new business for stormwater issues on Matsu land west of Settlers Lane.
Second.
Okay, so we have a change, a motion, and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Make duly changed.
Make a motion. We adopt the agenda as changed, as
second.
Amended.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Any public comments? Any on the system? Or any public comments that want to phone in? This is the 3 minute section. This is the 3 minute section of the meeting where you each get to discuss your point of view for 3 minutes.
Somebody's got the news on the back now.
Yeah, I think someone needs to mute their phone. We cannot hear.
We've got it.
Okay.
Do y'all have it?
We got it.
All right. Are there any notes from anyone in your system, Mandy?
No, sir.
Okay, we have no one to express counsel. Moving on. We'll move to the presentations, and the first presentation tonight is Wes McLeod, Cape Fear Council of Government and the Land Use Plan presentation. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for joining us.
Mr. Mayor, thank you, and board, thank you very much for having me here this evening. I'm also here with Patrick Plan again. He's our regional planner with the Council of Governments.
Thank you both for coming.
Sure. Is there a clicker?
There is.
Good luck.
All right. Y'all can't have this beautiful town hall and not have a clicker that doesn't work.
Yeah.
In any case, I'm here tonight just to provide an overview of kind of what a comprehensive plan is, what it entails typically, and then also really to allow you all to answer, to ask questions about it. You know, why do you want to do these things? What do they cost? All these types of things. So I prefer if we could keep it informal. So as I go, please do interject and ask me questions that you may have. I also brought Patrick just so you guys can be familiar with him and know him as a staff person of the Council of Governments. So the quote that I also often share about just planning in general in what I believe that is to towns that proceed with working on these things. Planning is bringing the future into the present so that you can do something about it now. So understanding about what those things are important to you, figuring out how to plan long term, is really a good quote about local governments and understanding what they need to do to protect those things that they feel are important to them. And land use planning is really a good way to do that. So what is a comprehensive plan specifically? It is a policy document. That's really what it boils down to. But that policy document is based on principles established by public input and based on a vision, set of visions and goals that are based on public input, but also analysis that takes place about the existing conditions in the town and what some of the future conditions may be. Now you may hear someone say land use plan, CAMA land use plan, comprehensive land use plan. All those terms are in effect used interchangeably. The from a statutory standpoint, the legislation refers specifically to comprehensive plans, but those terms really can be used interchangeably. So you could call it the Curry Beach Land Use Plan or the Curry Beach Camel Land Use Plan. It doesn't really matter. It is all a comprehensive plan. As I stated, it is a policy document. As part of that, you'll have a long-term visions and goals established that will be part of the initial public engagement process to help figure out what the vision is for the town moving forward based on a defined time frame. It helps guide short-term land use and development approval decisions. So, in a lot of jurisdictions, not typically our beach towns, the governing board is hearing rezoning cases night after night after night, and all of those rezoning cases have to be based on the merits of the land use plan. They don't necessarily have to act consistently with them, but that land use plan is used to help guide the decision makers in coming to some sort of conclusion about that case. Now, you all may use a land use plan more for if there's a text amendment that comes before you. If there's anything in that land use plan that would help guide your decision-making process, or for example, I understand you're in the process of a historic district preservation commission. There may have been something in your land use plan that's helped you lead to that outcome. So those are some of the things that the land use plan can do. So it would, of course, include recommendations to revise any of your zoning or subdivision ordinances, but also looks at things like recreational facilities, transportation networks. For you guys, that may also mean bicycle and pedestrian networks. And it's really kind of a big picture look at suggestions, not getting into real fine detail about where a bike path exactly needs to go or where a playground needs to go, but just a big picture thing about the things that are important to the community as it relates to recreation or transportation networks. One of the things that's important, particularly for beach towns, is understanding the needs of your permanent residents versus your seasonal visitors. And balancing those needs, of course, in line with that is also the need to understand balancing environmental protection versus job creation, development, etc. And those things should be spelled out in your land use plan. It depends on the community. The Division of Coastal Management will tell us that we should be updating the plans every 5 to 7 years. And now the legislature, I believe, is going to tell us that, although they haven't explicitly said what a, quote, reasonably maintained land use plan is. But I will add that updating your plan every 5 to 7 years is quite an undertaking. Oftentimes these things will take nearly 3 years from start to finish in terms of getting adopted. So the notion that you got to start again in a couple years is a little bit overwhelming. I believe you guys' most recent plan is from
2006.
Yeah. And that's very common. I'd say once you're getting into the 20 plus years, obviously your plan is pretty outdated, but in our region of our 44 local governments, I don't think there's a single one of those jurisdictions that's been updating their plan, at least in a comprehensive fashion, every 5 to 7 years. Yes, sir.
If you back up, but
it's not working.
It is working. Yeah. He's going back.
Balancing the competing needs. Second one on environmental protection versus job creation. I don't see that as a competition. I think you can protect the environment and create jobs. Now, sometimes a particular job might be bad for the environment, but I don't see that all job creation necessarily is bad for the environment. In fact, a lot of environmental tasks might create a job to help clean up the environment. So,
Yes, sir. I think that's a good comment. And, you know, I'm certain these are just kind of examples, and some of them may or may not be as relevant here, where environmental protection perhaps is going to lead to even more jobs because you're going to have more visitors, et cetera. But yes, you know, all those types of things will be fleshed out. You know, I think exactly those types of comments help guide, you know, establishing a community vision and figuring out what those goals are. You know. But thank you, that's a good comment. And really that guidance needs to come from public engagement. This is one of the biggest components of any planning process, is understanding the needs of the community. So whoever is, whether it's a committee of elected officials or staff and other citizens working on a plan, or a consultant is hired to work on the plan, it's very important that the community weigh in on those things that they want to see happen. You know, I say this all the time, if we're hired to write a plan, I am not going to be guiding the policy. The policy should be guided on what that public input is that we have solicited from folks. And so the key there is that helps legitimize that final plan. You know, one of the ways to do that is you have a steering committee, you have a community-wide survey, stakeholder interviews, maybe you have a plan website, and you know, the goal being understanding where the citizens want the community to be in 20, 25 years, whatever it may be. Things are a little more interesting now in times of COVID, whereas, you know, in the past, you'd have, you know, some public open houses, you would invite the public to come and attend meetings, provide some in-person commentary on things. That sort of is not happening now, obviously. But I will say that even pre-COVID, typically the most robust form of public engagement would come from that online survey. So we'd have an online survey and get a significant number of responses. In fact, in the last two or three projects we've done, we've gotten close to 90% of the permanent resident population to weigh in on that survey. And so while it may not be a huge number, that really captures the things that are important to folks.
That is a big number. Is that a typical survey that you have, or is that one that has to be developed for us?
That's a, you know, a fairly standard template. You know, certain criteria, questions, and topics, they may be tweaked depending on the community.
Okay.
But yes.
So it's 80% normal and then some percent?
I mean, that's very high, and that is only in our beach towns, Mike.
Okay.
You know, folks are hold very dear to their heart the reasons they moved and live in these places, and so oftentimes they don't want to see them negatively impacted. And as a result, they want to make sure their voice is heard. And so they're going to participate in that survey. And so that's a very high number. And we've also found that, you know, most of those folks are also property owners. So, and there's ways that we go about trying to determine, you know, we'll ask folks if they're a property owner, you know, second homeowner, et cetera, or permanent resident.
Okay.
So the things that, you know, you would look at in terms of the planning document is how are you changing, you know, understanding the demographics, for example. And I just quickly put up a table here showing your permanent population, not your seasonal population, but this is just your permanent resident population from 1990 to 2019. And you can see, obviously, the town is grown exponentially. Now, that's in terms of the residents that are living here year-round. Obviously, you have a lot more growth and development from seasonal property owners, but this is a beach town where you have a higher percentage of folks that are living here full-time than many other places. I think that's somewhere around 40% or so of your housing units are occupied by permanent residents. Whereas you go in some of the Brunswick County beach towns, that number may be 10%. So you have a very substantial change in the summer. Not to say that you don't have a big change here, but it is not as dramatic. But you've grown quite significantly over that time, almost close to 300%, an increase of, since 1990, of 1,600 permanent residents. At the same time, of course, New Hanover County has grown significantly. Who knows what this pandemic is going to do to our seasonal destinations, but even prior to the pandemic, we were seeing a little bit of an uptick in some of the seasonal housing turning over to permanent resident housing by virtue of the fact that folks are able to work remotely and live where they want to live. As I stated before, in developing that comprehensive plan, you need to have a vision that then has goals, policies, and recommended actions. And it's really those recommended actions that help lead you to getting into your vision. And those recommended actions can be very specific. And what that allows a community to do is the planning board, staff, whoever the responsible party is, can go through and they've got a laundry list of things that they can work on. Some of them may just never get touched, but many of the other items may be utilized to help achieve the policies or goals that are established as part of that plan. And typically there's a matrix that all of those recommended actions are put into with, you know, a fiscal year, a responsible party, things of that nature, any sort of costs that may be involved as well. The typical elements, the vision, as I stated before, statement on the history, some of the demographic trends and projections, and then also the topic areas. Because you are, a Cama County and a Cama community, it would be my recommendation, if you're going to engage in this process, that you also comply with the Division of Coastal Management's rules for their Cama plan, so that you can create a plan that also would meet their needs. And so you'll look at natural systems, environmental constraints, utility and infrastructure, transportation, and then, recreation and open space would be a component. And then obviously land use and growth management. One of the requirements, anytime that you are going to modify your zoning or subdivision or development ordinances, is a statement of consistency as to that text amendment or rezoning. So the planning board and both the elected board has to comment on the consistency of that amendment with your plan. Now you can act inconsistent with the plan, but the plan must be taken into account nonetheless. And a new change is, I think this isn't necessarily going to affect you all, because I don't believe doing many rezonings. If you do act inconsistent with your plan for a rezoning, a zoning map amendment, then that land use plan would be amended automatically.
That's only for rezoning, not for text amendments?
It's only for rezoning, yes, sir.
And the amendment eventually makes its way onto the map.
That's correct, yes, sir. I mentioned before, a CAMA land use plan is the same as a comprehensive plan, but there's some other requirements that you would need to meet. Now, Division of Coastal Management has relaxed those rules considerably from what they were. I think they made this change about 5 years ago. So it's a lot easier for a community to have a plan that is really driven by what you want to see, but also make sure that you address a couple policy statements and allow you also to have a plan that's compliant with their rules. Those plans are designed to manage and preserve coastal resources, and they are pretty heavily environmental in nature. So there's some, they can be fairly rigid, and it's a good thing now that they have allowed folks to really create a plan that meets their needs, not necessarily the Division of Coastal Management. So what are the time frames and planning horizons? Depends on the community. Usually you're looking out, you know, somewhere 20 to 30 years. So you guys may be doing the Curie Beach 2040 or the Curie Beach 2050 plan. And that coincides with population projections and potential build-out scenarios, although you're just about built out, I'll add. As stated, you know, updates are generally needed every 5 to 7 years. That often does not happen. Depending on the jurisdiction, that planning process typically takes 12 to 24 months. And that's, you know, myself or Patrick, we can go write that document, you know, in a week or two. But when you are going through, you know, policies that have the potential to impact the town, it takes quite a long time to come to terms with, you know, things that may be disagreeable for folks, and to reach consensus. And so really, the part that takes the longest is, you know, sorting through the document, figuring out what's important, what we're going to keep, what we're going to change, etc. And then it's also important, you know, on the front of that, front end of any planning process, you make sure you've given enough time for the public to weigh in before you start getting too far down in policy development. In terms of costs, you know, at least our organization, and these costs vary all over the state depending on, you know, which consultant you may be using. We tend to think of our plans as Honda Accord plans. It's what you need. And you can get a Ferrari if you want, and that's totally up to you. But there's plenty of folks that pay, you know, $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 for their land use plan. But recently, we've prepared these plans for Ocean Isle Beach, Sunset Beach, and Holden Beach in the, you know, $35,000 range. Yes, sir.
Is that the creation of a land use plan, or is that an update to an existing plan?
That is typically a, I mean, you utilize, you at least are not going to throw out your existing policies with bathwater. But you're more or less creating a new document, new population figures, new maps, things of that nature. And then you go through the full-blown policy development.
So what you're saying is, regardless of the existing format, those elements that you just referred to basically are the drivers for the cost.
In terms of sorting through the policies and doing the adequate public engagement, yes. And in terms, you know, as I stated prior, it doesn't take that long to write the plan. You know, that's really the easy part. And that's just the nature of how these things go. You know, we're finishing up a plan at Holden Beach that I think we started in 2016 or maybe 2017, I'll be there for their adoption hearing tomorrow night. South Fork, we started on what was presumably a simple update process and took 2 years to just go through their policies. It's just how it goes. And it may be different for you guys. Maybe you guys are all in agreement, so you know exactly what you need, and it's easy, no problem. But it's just, usually that's what happens. Usually how it goes.
Yes.
So, do you know the price before you go in, or do you figure out the price depending on the work involved?
What we typically do, we have a not to exceed fee. So we would give you a, you know, and look, I'm just giving you an example. I'm not suggesting that you hire us or anything of that nature.
Sure.
But I'm providing you the information that the cost that we typically are able to do these plans. But there'd be a not to exceed fee that would be established in accordance with the proposal and a contract.
I was going to say that we did not talk a lot about that, so we did ask you. Your standard fee looks to be about $35,000.
Yes.
What I would say is, I guess we would be willing to talk, since you developed our last plan.
Sure.
And I would assume this will be an update to that last plan. But we haven't given you any information about what we're trying to do or what we want to do or what we want you to do. We don't know your process. We don't know if you have... You give us monthly reports. I mean, you give us a quarterly report on where you are. You have public meetings every 3 months, or I mean, we don't understand anything about the process. We do understand what the plan is, and I understand that that's a ballpark cost for your fee.
Sure.
And we just need to understand what that covers.
Sure. And absolutely. Let's talk about that. And believe me, I wasn't necessarily coming here saying that you need to hire me. I was just giving you, you got to provide the information that folks need. Yeah.
And you don't need to give us details tonight. Sure. I'm just telling you that.
Yeah.
I understand what the 35 is.
So that would typically be more or less that would be us handling the process, mm-hmm. leading, we would be there for all the meetings, developing all the chapters, developing all the maps, developing all the analysis, and then providing the consensus building for, going through your policy updates. So, and the reason why it can be more expensive or more time consuming to update in one of these older plans, because the older plans have elements in them that are often irrelevant, particularly for the beach communities. There is an analysis about land capacity and things of that nature that you guys don't need to go through. You don't need to do a land suitability analysis, mm-hmm. for example, right? Maybe if you're a big county that you have large greenfield areas, but you don't. So there's things in the older plans that, frankly, I feel like don't necessarily make sense. And they tend to be longer than they need to be also. That plan that you have is one built on the old framework that was required by DCM. And mm-hmm. I've been through many of this painstakingly. And so there's not a significant cost difference. You potentially are going to be wasting more time going through, potentially. Now, again, this is my recommendation, and if you were to hire us, you're going to take a lot of elements of that plan. Certainly, you're going to figure out, you're going to look at your existing vision statement. Does it still make sense? You're not going to just toss it out. Mm-hmm. You're going to take into account the whole public participation. You're going to go through all of the policies. There may be some that are no longer relevant, but you're not going to start from scratch per se.
Right.
The process goes, typically we would be brought on board, we establish a kickoff committee, we would meet with staff, possibly do some stakeholder interviews with elected officials. And the first thing that we would do at that first meeting is have a draft of that community-wide survey. And the charge would be, we need to get this survey going as quickly as possible. Because that will allow for adequate time for folks to take that survey, whether it be 3 months, 4 months, 2 months. That will just depend on discussion with the community. And then from there, you're just developing, going chapter by chapter. Typically, there's about 6 chapters in the plans that we help folks write. And you develop a chapter the next month. You go to the planning board, steering committee, whoever the advisory committee may be, oftentimes the planning board. Deliver them chapter one, they have a whole month or two to review it. You come back at the next time you meet, they're ready to go through that thing page by page. At that meeting, they're given chapter two, and you go on that way, mm-hmm. Until once you've gotten all the chapters developed, we'll then bring in a fully revised plan based on all the comments and things that were necessary as part of drafting that document. Whatever board it would be recommends that plan to the elected board, and maybe there's a joint work session, maybe there's not. These are things that would potentially get sorted out in a proposal.
Certainly. Okay. And I would imagine this is a several hundred page document like the old one is.
It depends. You can get them down to, you know, close to the 100-page range. Thicker is not always better, in my opinion, particularly these days. You know, you get these things written and nobody reads them anymore.
Yeah. I was really going to push you a little bit on, so how many copies do you get in that 35,000?
Well, it's up to you, but usually it's about 10.
Oh, about 10?
Yeah.
Okay.
Plus the digital.
Yeah, plus the digital. I know that, it just depends who you ask. There's plenty of consultants that they wouldn't walk out of their front door to do a land use plan for anything less than 50 or 60 grand. And that's one of the reasons why we don't have almost any time to do any of these, because folks are often utilizing us.
Okay.
Is it still June of 2022 that this has to be?
July 2022.
Okay, so a year and a half.
Again, and the attorney can weigh in on this perhaps as well. The statute says that you have to have a quote reasonably maintained plan. You have a plan. I don't know if it will be litigated what reasonably maintained means. I suspect it may be, or the legislature will specifically provide us guidance on that. I don't know if legal counsel wants to weigh in on that.
I doubt the legislature will provide specific guidance. You could make the argument that 2006 has been a reasonable plan that satisfies that requirement. But regardless, even based on your projected schedule, we'll be fine.
Depending on. And we can talk about timing and things of that nature, but I think you would be fine. I don't think that your zoning authority is going to be taken away. You have a plan that was adopted in the 2000s. I think you are fine. I don't necessarily think you need to comply with that July 1. I think what's more important for you guys is that it sounds like there's been enough change or enough has gone on that it's time for you to update your plan. I think
that's probably the right perspective, because we have taken some big steps and we're taking some additional big steps. So I agree, if you approach it as a necessary update, it also satisfies that July 1, 2022 requirement. So we're good both ways.
There's a long list of ordinance changes since 2006 that's been provided for us, that Beth got for us.
Mm-hmm. And the historic district, there's been some comprehensive.
Okay.
And as stated prior, and we just sort of talked about this, but your 160D update, you're required to update your zoning and subdivision ordinance with anything that's referencing 160A and a number of other sort of primarily housekeeping items. That, of course, needs to be adopted by July 1, 2021, and of course, the question was by Commissioner Whitley, when do you need to adopt this, and it's on there in that bottom bullet, July 1, 2022. And so, luckily, all of our coastal communities have at least adopted a comprehensive plan. It's going to be real trouble in some of the western parts of the state where this type of thing has not occurred. There's starting to be some level of panic, at least, is going on.
Well, speaking of that, is there going to be a problem with staff level impact if all of those western places realize this and contracts with you guys in the quarter one and quarter two of 2021?
They're different cogs. We do have Columbus County, which does have some places. But I was just on a call last week with the school government and several of the executive directors from the other cogs across the state. And there's some concern. I don't know if it'll happen, but I won't be surprised if that timeline gets pushed out another year.
Yeah. I think COVID's going to
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other question is, I understand you're a different cog, but your staff could be farmed out. If you don't get enough business inside of Cape Fear and other places ask, that expertise works everywhere. I assume that would happen. Maybe not. I'm asking a question.
No, yes, we could be called on. Unfortunately, we have more work than we can do now. We have 14 local governments that we've contracted with to do the ordinance updates for 160D, and really we have a staff of one, which is me. So Patrick is our RPO director, so he's primarily doing transportation things and is assisting with some land use plan matters here and there.
That raises the question, if the town goes with you, can you meet that deadline?
That is what I was going to, as I alluded to with schedule, we are highly, we got a lot on our plate right now. So even if, say we did, you guys wanted us to contract with you, we would need to be thinking that it is unlikely that there could be any real significant progress made until probably somewhere into the early summer. As that first priority, we've been assisting our local governments in these 160D arrangements. Initially, we agreed to do 8, and then as folks realized that they weren't going to be able to get it done themselves, that number has slowly inched upward to the point now, the last 3 we've agreed that we've told them, quite frankly, it is unlikely for it to be done before July 1, 2021. And they're okay with that, but that leads me to, we would have to establish a schedule. There's things that can be done, as I said, get the survey up and running, start folks, providing that input and so forth. But unfortunately, we're pretty heavily loaded up. We do have some additional staff that will be coming on board in January. And one of the other reasons why I brought Patrick is that he can also provide some assistance in developing a plan.
I understand the 160D July 2021 deadline, and that you've got a lot on your plate. With that, if we contracted with you, do you anticipate being able to meet the July 1, 2022 for the land use plan deadline?
Well, that I can get the plan written. That's, it depends on, oftentimes that question is out of my hands, unfortunately. It won't be a matter of necessarily me. It may be a matter of, you guys aren't ready to move forward with something, and you shouldn't be. I don't ever recommend that you rush through these things. It's your chance to really dive in and go through these policies and get them the way you want. And so maybe another consultant would come in here and tell them that they can rush through this thing and get it done for you in a year. It's possible. But remember, if this plan is also going to be your CAMA plan, you also have a minimum 90-day review period for a Division of Coastal Management. And so you have to get the plan all the way drafted, approved by planning board. You send it to Division of Coastal Management. Now they tell you it's a minimum 90 days. What happens is 120 days later, you're asking the Division of Coastal Management, can we please get our document back because we would like to get it adopted. So you've got about 4 months right there. They're just completely out of the window, and have no control, for us. Now, what you could do is the planning board could approve the document, and then the board of commissioners can approve the document, go ahead and adopt it, while you're waiting for Division of Coastal Management to come back. Because your plan can be your plan for statutory zoning purposes by July 1, 2022, but you may just have to wait to get it certified. And I know that probably seems confusing, but that's one way you can do it.
Okay. All right. Thank you very kindly. Anybody have any final questions? We still got a long way to go tonight, and a staff that has been here all day. So, any other questions?
Real quick, and Attorney Eldridge, correct me if I'm speaking correctly. P&Z will take up the last of our 160D starting in January, so that we will have ours finished by July 1st of 2021. Okay. So.
Yeah, I don't anticipate, meeting the July 1, 2021 160D conformity project by that deadline. Means I gotta get a year.
Thank you, Wes. Thank you,
thank you all.
Thank you very much for coming to see us.
Happy to answer any other questions.
All right, we'll be in touch. Thank you. Good to see you. Okay. Next on the agenda is the Bike Ped Committee.
She's later on the agenda.
Mom's going to visit, updating the old business.
Yeah.
Got to give us an update later?
Yeah.
All right. Hang on a second. Yeah, I got ahead of myself. Got ahead of myself here, but we did move into committee business. So.
Mayor, before we leave LUP, do we have some sort? What I heard were time constraints all over the place. Do we have some sort of handle on what we do next and when we might do it? Are you going to put it back on the agenda as old business next month? I'm just kind of curious how we're going.
Well,
the next step is.
I believe that we need to talk about it a little more and probably put it on the agenda for next month. Frankly, $35,000, if that's from zero, then do it from zero. If it's with a document that's 50% already complete, I have a different view.
Well, yeah.
I would say that no matter what, after 30 years of being an attorney, you can be updating or starting anew, but it somehow or another, by magic, seems to end up being the same amount of work. I don't understand that. I did think you made some interesting points about weaving in changes, and even since I've been here in 2014, there have been some significant changes, and there'll be some significant changes. So. That is a definite element of the contemplated work. The online survey also seemed to me to be very interesting because of the need for public input. It's your all's decision about the cost, but I do think that I don't have any subjective opinions about that, but apparently there is a good deal of work to be done. The LUPC recognized that in general. I think he spelled out certain components of that. Whether the COGS price is too high or too low based on what we have, he probably wasn't in a position to elaborate on that. That is an interesting point in terms of what the final cost will be.
Right. We didn't tell him what we have. We asked him what was his fee and what does he give us for that fee. And he told us what he gave us. Now the question is, I think this council over the last 6 to 8 years actually has been very involved in work on drainage, on our P&Z team has been very inclusive. We've worked on overlay districts. We've done a variety of things. I think our visions are pretty solid. I think we know where we wish to go. We may need help on how to write that. But you're right. At the end of the day, we need to have a good professional document that is defendable, defensible, and makes sense and we can follow.
And I'll make two other points. I don't think staff, the committee, and myself are in the position to do what needs to be done efficiently within the time frame. Oh. The second thing I would make, I can't quantify it, but there's no doubt in my mind that a consultant's price is going to be much higher than even their max price that was presented in the PowerPoint, much higher. So my encouragement to the council is to develop a plan or have a consensus on where we go next with this and how we're going to get there and whether somebody needs to negotiate directly with COG, because I think we're in limbo until we get to the next step.
Right. I'll reach out to COG this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, this week is Monday.
Yeah, I agree with the attorney. I think if you went to a private consultant, it will be more. One, they're starting from zero, even though I don't think he answered your question very well, but it was a great question, by the way. And I think if we don't get started, the time will march on, and then we're not going to get there, right? We know we've got a deadline. We know we've got a hard requirement. I think council at the next meeting should have the price or proposal. We should empower Commissioner Whitley to reach out and ask for a proposal for a land use plan and then act on that at the January meeting. So I make a motion we authorize Commissioner Whitley to work with the attorney and P&Z to request for proposals from the Council of Governments for a land use plan for the town of Cure Beach.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Yes, John.
To do something like this, do we have to, like, put an RFP out? Yeah.
Not to that amount.
I mean, we can just ask one organization to give us a bid, and then we can act on that?
Yeah, it's a service contract. Yes, you don't necessarily have to have bids.
It's not engineering or architecture. That's right. The problem I'm running into. Stormwater.
Yeah.
That was a question.
Yep. Great question.
Yeah, it is a good question.
Any other discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay. You got the ball.
Okay.
All right.
It'll be done.
I really would like to get their process identified. Okay, so we're in a committee report. So Community Center Committee, they still have not met. They're not going to meet until next year. Historical Preservation Commission.
Yes.
Evening, Craig. Thank you for coming in.
And Craig Galbraith, the chair of the Historical Preservation Commission. I thought what I would do tonight is present a kind of short presentation, since you do have the recommendation of the HPC right now. So let me pull this up. All right, very good. What I did in this presentation, I don't believe there's any action that needs to be taken by the council tonight, but I think there's probably some issues that need to be discussed a little bit, because this has been going on now for about a year. And what I did in this presentation is look at some ideas under three different issues that I think might come up on the part of the commission, on the part of the council, and part of the population in general. So let me kind of walk through, I think, these three major issues. There we go. Issue one. We use the word historic district, but this actually creates a lot of confusion. It really is a lot more than historic district, and I can't read that very well, so I'm going to go ahead and read from up here.
That's okay.
That's okay. So, again, this is the B1 district is what we're really talking about right here. That was established by the council, I think, back in February or March when you wanted us to look at just the B1 district. It's a four-block area that represents a mix of commercial and residential structures, contains the oldest buildings in the town. B1 district is the town's only commercial district, beach-oriented hotels, shops, restaurants, and retains an ambiance reflective of 1950s, 1960s coastal community. Also located within the B1 district are several public beach access points, the town's boardwalk, and the town's beachfront park and pavilion, and the town's only stoplight intersection and the oldest fishing pier on Atlantic coast, originally built in 1923. Also kind of point out, since we were talking about the land use plan, that in the existing land use plan, there's several references. I think there's a number of different references that we put into the designation report. The town's land use plan specifically encourages the maintenance and restoration of these features and sets forth as one of the town's stated land use goals, the need to preserve the family beach and small town feel of the town. Mm-hmm. So, And looking at the statutes, again, we talked about 168, that's what we were working on up until, you know, very recently. But I should point out that the language in the 160D is exactly the same in terms of what we're talking about here. So the language is going to be exactly the same here. It says, according to 168-400, that sets forth the public policy authorizing the designation of historic districts. It's a safeguard the heritage of the city or county by preserving any district or landmark. And again, we're talking about districts here, not specific landmarks. Therein that embodies important elements of culture, history, architectural history, and prehistory. And it's also to promote and use the conservation of such district or landmark for the education, pleasure, and enrichment of the residents of the city or county and the state as a whole. Under North Carolina law, historic districts are basically the only mechanism by which to manage the look. Again, that's not true of most states within the United States, which allows towns and communities to have architectural review commissions and things like that. We can't really do that here in the state of North Carolina, so this is really the only mechanism to really manage the feel, the look, the design of a community. There's some discussion about special use permits. That's a very ineffective way. In fact, it's really designed, SUPs are designed to manage the use. In fact, that's why the word use is in special use permits. So you can certainly manage the activities that go on within a particular district or zoning district. But in terms of what it looks like, SUPs are very, very ineffective methods of doing that. Really, the only way to do that is through a historic district. To avoid the confusion, we are proposing the title of it Security Beach Downtown Preservation and Historic District. I should note that in North Carolina, there are many different districts that do not have the word historic in it because it does create a confusion, because as soon as you hear the word historic district, people start knee-jerking around, things that are built in 1860 or 1880, and we're trying to preserve exactly that particular historic building or whatever. So there are actually many historic districts in the state of North Carolina that don't even have the word historic in it. Should point out that this is very common. North Carolina currently has 103 historic preservation commissions. There are 103 different towns and communities in North Carolina that have historic preservation commissions like what we have here. And by the way, we're not counted in that 103. I just got onto the website today. For the state of North Carolina, we're not counted in that 103, so there's at least 104 then, I think, in the state. And actually, in the state of North Carolina, there are 712 historic districts. So, it is a very, very common process that we're talking about going through right now, and including many coastal communities. Wilmington has 5 historic districts. Southport has 1. Beaufort has several. There are several communities up in the Hatteras area that have historic districts and so forth. And again, trying to get away from the word historic district, because what we're really trying to do is understand the culture and the ambiance of this, in addition to some historic buildings possibly being in this particular area. The second issue is the impact on the community. This is kind of interesting because a lot of people will say, well, what's the impact on the community? I know that's a concern of several members on the commission and the council here. In terms of what's the impact of doing this, there actually have been several academic studies looking at the impact of historic districts on communities. Without question, all of them show a positive impact. The most recent one, which is the one I cite right here, is 2014 Historic District Influence on House Prices and Marketing Duration in the Journal of Real Estate Finance Economics, volume 48, pages 112 to 131. And I did pull out 2 quotes here which summarize their findings. The first is a quote that summarizes all the prior academic and research regarding the impact. It says, most of the existing literature focuses on the extent to which historic district designation is capitalized into house values inside the historic district. Individual property owners that pay a price premium reap the benefits of the prestige, government commitment, higher rates of appreciation, and reduced uncertainty about neighborhood preservation associated with historic designations. So that's referring to all the prior research that has been done, because it does, yes?
I'll let you finish your statement, okay. Then I want to ask you a question.
And then this the second quote right here summarizes what they found. This is the only study I could find that actually looks at property prices within the historic district as well as the surrounding area. That's what makes this one a little bit different. It says, our results support the established notion in urban economics literature that historic preservation generally has a positive impact on property values within a historic district, and in particular that the historic designation is associated, and this is what they found, the average property value increase of over 5% in house values. We do find that the designation of a neighborhood as a historic has a positive spillover effect for nearby residential properties. Our findings imply that the historic district preservation efforts do result in positive externalities for both properties inside as well as outside the historic boundaries. So, you know, there's certainly a lot of evidence to show that, because I know that several council members asked for evidence in terms of the impact.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask about. So both of these statements are about housing, not commercial properties. The district we're talking about is almost exclusively commercial properties. Is there any literature that talks about commercial properties?
Yes, these are looking at overall, you know, and they're looking at housing right here, but, you know, many of these historic districts would also include commercial properties. I would have to go back and look at all the specific literature to see if they didn't.
I'm just interested because I tried to look that up and I can't find it for the same, but I may not have looked in the same place as you would. So just for me, the question still stands. All of the stuff you just said is related to houses, single-family houses for the most part. None of it's related to commercial property.
I would have to look back at the literature.
Okay.
This is very, a lot of pretty academic type of literature.
I understand.
The only comment I would make, and I don't know, I haven't seen the report, but that second quote does refer to property values, not necessarily limited to residential. That's one way of reading it.
I understand. That's one way of reading it. I read it that way.
You know, certainly from the theory that they're talking about, the theory is that it would apply to commercial as well as residential. I mean, the idea here is that there's a price benefit of government commitment, reduced uncertainty about neighborhood preservation associated with historic designation, the prestige, and these sort of things. That would certainly apply to commercial as well as residential. But I can certainly go back and check to see if residential.
That's just my question.
But talking about outlying areas or surrounding areas, that's basically all residential, so if it helps within the district, it would help those homes outside of the district in the way that that's presented.
I don't know if I agree with that one either, but okay, fine.
Well, what I also did here is go back to the Sawyer study that was done about 13 years ago. They actually did a survey. I thought it was very interesting. I looked through this and I just pulled out the empirical research here, and there were several questions like, what do you like about the Curie Beach Business District? The number one response was a small town feel, quaintness, old-timey atmosphere. Second one was, how important are the following to improve the business district? The response, the number one response was to retain the historic character. And then the third one here is, how should the business district look in terms of community appearance? The number one response in the survey was adopt architectural controls to achieve a beach theme. So, you know, certainly, you know, based on the survey that was done 13 years ago, what we're talking about here is a very important way to go ahead and implement what the residents are talking about.
Okay.
In terms of the procedure, again, when we think about the Curie Beach Downtown Preservation Historic District, it is technically an overlay district on the B1 district, thus an amendment to zoning is required. This requires a number of different things. One, that the planning and zoning have to review and make a recommendation to the county council on this. Town council then has to have a public hearing, and then there has to be a vote by the town council. So basically, the Historic Preservation Commission, in terms of the designation of the historic district, is out of the hands right now of the HPC and now in the hands of the P&Z and the town council. Planning and zoning will review the required zoning amendments in its January meeting. Okay, so that will come forth by Mr. Eldridge is working on that. Right now, so it will be reviewed in terms of the specific language that's required in terms of the zoning amendment. The HPC does still have a job to do, and that's to come up with some design guidelines or design standards. We are holding a special meeting after discussion with the town staff as well as Mr. Eldridge. Rather than calling this a public hearing to talk about the design guidelines, we can advertise it as for opportunity for public input by calling it a special meeting. So we have a special meeting designated. It's already been advertised and is out there specifically to discuss the design guidelines
Can you explain why it's a special meeting versus a public hearing, just for my interest?
Well, we took in consideration several things. If you're going to have a public hearing, you would do, you would require newspaper publication. You also would require, your all's practice in this town is to, in one meeting, fix a date for the public hearing. The next meeting, you would have the public hearing. Because of COVID-19 legislation, you have a 24-hour period after that meeting before you can act in order to receive public comments. So really, you don't act until 3 months later, and you've got the cost of the newspaper publication. The alternative was to have a special meeting a half hour before HBC's regular meeting, because the notice for a special meeting has to announce the purpose of that meeting, and that purpose is to discuss and receive comments on these design standards. Seemed to me to be a more efficient and cheaper way of achieving the same result.
So how did it go out to the public? I'm looking on our website. Did it go out via email and all the other ways, Mandy?
You did, just like a regular notice for a meeting.
Yeah, so
like
which is email, meeting. Right?
Yep. The only way it didn't go out was town newspaper. It wasn't included in there, but it was the same for everything else.
But it goes out via the email, okay. I just want to make sure people have the opportunity.
Oh, no, that's very important. We're very concerned about, you know, making sure that there's not only public input, but the council has some strong input in terms of what the design guidelines might look like. I should point out that...
they're encouraged to attend that.
Yeah, absolutely. So the proposed design guidelines and standards, we've already been doing a fair amount of work on this, and again, we're going to get from Mr. Eldridge the final kind of language from our proposals. They're very flexible and simple. They're only a one-and-a-half-page set of guidelines. The specific purpose of these are to encourage development by the property owners within the particular district if they want, but simply with designs that are compatible with the district. That's really all that we're trying to do here. We're not trying to inhibit. In fact, we're trying to encourage development, but encourage development that, on the looks, are compatible with what we're trying to have within a particular district.
All right. I am really happy to actually hear you say it that particular way. I will look forward to looking at that material, because a couple things came to my mind as you read all this, right? And some of them they're very simple to me. If I live in this district and I want to sell a home, is there a special contract I now have to pass? Or is it just a standard real estate agreement?
Standard real estate agreement.
Okay. Well, if I want to...
Yeah, except now you have to disclose all these rules, so it's not a standard agreement, because the disclosure form changes drastically with this.
That is the reason I asked that comment, right? And then the second thing is, if I own a property down there and I want to change it, I have to follow the design guidelines, which will be coming forward, I guess. Otherwise, I cannot change it. Right. I need our approval to change it.
The process is what is called a certificate of appropriateness, or a COA. Mm-hmm. It's easier to call it a COA. We are in the process of, again, we're trying to make this as simple as possible and as flexible mm-hmm. as possible. What we don't want is certain things occurring in the downtown area.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the mechanism that we have to kind of examine that with. So,
and then one other quick example.
If I could just finish in terms of the COA process. We're going to have what are called major and minor changes, if you will. Minor ones can simply go to staff, and staff can simply say it's approved. So if you're just changing a window or changing something like that, it doesn't have to go through a whole process. You know, it can just be done by staff, and they can say that's fine. Maybe they don't even need a COA. Anything major, if they're talking about building a new building or adding a significant addition to it or adding a second or a third floor, that would have to go to the Historic Preservation Commission, and they would have to show that what they're proposing is compatible vis-a-vis the guidelines that we have, and they would be issued a COA.
Okay, so I think
that's how it's done in the 700 different, I mean, it's a standard process.
Okay, so I think that is... I keep getting drawn into that 1860 house, which you cannot change, and all that stuff. If you change it, it has to be exactly identical. So if I happen to buy Bud and Joe's, but it's a little thing. It's one of those small, you know, can I rip it down?
Yes.
I can't.
Our design guidelines are not, anyway, we recognize, and this was based upon discussions with the council very early on, that yeah, people are property owners. They have property owners that are going to want to maximize the benefit out of their particular property. And I absolutely understand that. You know, I'm property owner of several properties in Fury Beach also. So this is not trying to do like what some historic districts, which is to preserve actually the historic, that, you know, if you change anything,
okay,
you know, you can't change anything or something like that. All we want to do is make sure that whatever's put out there is compatible with that beach community, that family community type of thing.
So you could put up what you want to put up, essentially just make sure it has that panache or that feel of the community.
Exactly.
Okay.
So we're not trying to restrict somebody who has a cottage from, you know, perhaps tearing down the cottage or adding to the cottage and making a larger type of property, making it a rental property, whatever it might be, or Bud and Joe's taking down and putting out. You know, we're not restricting that. We're not attempting to restrict that. All we want to do is make sure whatever is done is compatible with the image and the feel of what we have within our downtown community. And that's what the design guidelines are all about.
Okay. Thank you.
And I should point out that this doesn't affect the interior at all. That was one of the questions. And we've had open hearings, you know, during this whole process. Mm-hmm. At the very beginning, we had several different property owners come down, and they seemed to be very concerned about, well, is this going to affect their ability to do something on the interior? This does not affect the interior whatsoever. It's simply exterior.
Okay.
So anyway, come back here. We have a special meeting that's planned. If we want to do a formal public hearing, that would add an additional month. I don't think it would add a whole lot versus what we're trying to achieve within the public, within the special meeting. And then town council will receive the formal recommendation from planning and zoning regarding the text amendment to zoning, as well as the design standards and guidelines during the January town council meeting. And again, if we go back up to number one right there, that then the town council will have to set up a public hearing, probably in February. I put January, February, because there's certainly some choices there in terms of that. So that's kind of the process, and I'm certainly available to ask any questions, because again, you have the designation report right now, and so that's really what the HPC is done. We're done now. We've passed that on to the town council. And to the planning and zoning for a text amendment. And so the job of the HPC right now is really only to look at the design guidelines and get a set of design guidelines that are sufficient and that the council feels appropriate and that sort of thing. So we're certainly encouraging communication with the town council about the guidelines. As soon as we get the revision, we'll send it to everybody on the council prior to our. We're not trying to do anything that is not in agreement with the council.
I do have to say that the document is well written. I thank you, Craig, and your team did a nice job.
Thank you.
I learned some interesting things while I was reading it.
it's been a long process.
And
we have followed all the formalities of sending to the state and getting feedback to the state, hiring an architectural consultant. So we've gone through all the steps in terms of doing everything we need to do to have this done properly. So,
okay.
I think Mr. Elwood,
a couple of comments, Mayor and Council. Before I forget it, the COA process is a quasi-judicial proceeding in front of HPC. If the applicant doesn't like the result, they can appeal it to the BOA. So that's how that works.
Okay.
I did want to echo the Chairman Galbraith's comments. We have been extremely mindful during the entire process of making sure that property can be developed. We've been very mindful not to put any hindrances on property development. The thing that is very interesting to me, because I was, even though I've lived in this area for 30 years, I just never was familiar with Fury Beach. And my involvement of HPC, and I was even surprised by the Sawyer study that you mentioned tonight. And I grew up in Virginia Beach,
And I'm old enough that Virginia Beach was in the 60s and the 70s. That's gone. But I remember it very well. It was very special to me. And so my involvement of HPC gave me an insight into the town that I didn't have before. And I totally agree. This is a very unique community in terms of family-friendly, small-town, coastal community that still has those elements, for example, that Virginia Beach used to have and no longer has. When you go back to the statute, and Craig mentioned some of this in the beginning, it is an unfortunate misnomer that the statute calls all these things historic districts, but they authorize the designation of a historic district for a variety of fuzzy terms: ambiance, culture, significance, feeling, association. And there's no doubt in my mind that the small town family friendly environment of the 50s, 60s, and 70s is present. And we've tried to develop guidelines or standards, they now call them, that allow for property development, but also help to maintain that feeling. So those are my comments.
Okay.
Just one other quick comment, because again, we use the word historic. The definition, talking to the state, of historic is any building over 50 years old. And actually, within our proposed historic district, we have a lot of buildings that are 50 years old. When you think about that, that's going back to the mid-60s. Mm-hmm. So it's certainly more concentration on the ambiance and culture and that beach community and that sort of thing. But, you know, we do have an inventory. In fact, I believe it's in the report. Mm-hmm. We do have an inventory of buildings, too. And there are a number of, quote, definition, by definition, historic buildings within the district.
And that brings up one other point. It's something we dealt with in even with our interactions with the state office. And it's something that occurs without even thinking about it. But there is some latent confusion between historic districts and historic landmarks. And they're both in the same part of the statute. But it's important to realize we're not dealing with landmarks. We're dealing with districts and the feeling and the ambiance.
Okay.
Sometimes people tend to merge those two and by not focusing on landmarks, it frees us up to allow for the property development that we all envision happening.
Okay. Just as a wild stab, so we could take the north side of K to Atlantic, clear it, and build a beautiful restaurant. It should probably just look like a Howard Johnson's on the outside.
Can't look like that, right?
No, well,
I mean, certainly there are some vacant lots.
Howard Johnson's from the 50s.
Yeah. Look at the design guidelines. What you'll see, and again, when we get mm-hmm. the actual final copy, we'll certainly send it to everybody.
Okay.
You'll see that what we're trying to do is probably control for about three or four different type of things that we don't want to see there. But other than that, as long as it's compatible, you know, in terms of what we're trying to do, that's, you know, compatibility is one of the key terms you see in all these districts in terms of the language. So.
Okay. People making that decision will be important people.
Yes. Yes. And again, we're trying to encourage people to develop. We're not trying to restrict people from developing.
Excellent.
What we want to do is just make sure it's compatible in the district with what we're trying to achieve, right, based upon our land use plan, based upon what the residents have said in their surveys, mm-hmm. and what we've heard time and time again, that people want to see within that historic district to maintain that beach-friendly, that kind of feel, family-friendly kind of community. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we're trying to do. And again, doing it this way in the state of North Carolina is the only way we can manage this, given the statutes that North Carolina has passed, which is not true. If we were another state, we could possibly do it differently. But in this state, this is the only mechanism for doing it.
Okay. Thank you very much. And I look forward to keeping the ambiance and allowing them to grow the value of that property.
Yes, absolutely.
So, okay. All right. Next on the agenda is the Land Use Plan Committee. I guess we beat that to death.
We did not have a meeting this month. We were waiting for the presentation from COG. But Beth, as I mentioned earlier, did get all the ordinance changes from 2006 going forward. And those have been distributed to everybody so they can kind of get an idea of the changes that have gone on in the past 14 years to whatever form we take in working on that, however we go forward, so they would be familiar with it.
Okay.
And we'll meet again in January.
All right. Parking committee. We have met a few times since the last council meeting. We are in the process of going through all of the documents. We have taken the 6-3. Those three will be on telephone calls, Zoom calls with us this week, at the end of the week, to show us why they're the right choice and to answer the myriad of questions that we have for each of the proposals. We are still on track to bring a recommendation through to council, certainly provide paperwork before that, to the January meeting. That's still our intent. So we're moving on and often. Planning and zoning, I guess we covered that one, or do you have more to say, Craig?
All right. Planning and zoning, we don't have anything before you to, for any decisions right now, but I did want to bring a couple updates. As you know that, you know, we've kind of wrapped up the lighting ordinance and some of these sort of issues. So what we're going to be starting extensively is dealing with the 160D issues in January. I think that's going to occupy a lot of our time and a lot of our effort. We are also trying to deal with the prohibited use based upon a recent Supreme Court hearing. Is that some of the language that prohibits uses in the district is, we need to change that. I believe that we've come up with a maybe very simple solution for this that we'll be coming probably back to you with, but it hopefully will solve the problem, deal with that particular problem. The other thing too that was brought out that we're gonna push off certainly until we finish up the 160D is we have a couple zoning districts, business, commercial zoning districts in the town that have been developed as residential properties. For example, the one that's over on Fort Fisher and Curie Village Way, for example, that's actually technically a business district, but it's developed as a residential property. Probably sometime in the future, we would probably want to do rezoning so that the zoning actually reflects what's actually there versus what's not there right now. But those are the things that we'll be looking at, I think, over the next year.
Doesn't the business district allow residential? That's how it happens.
Yes, it does. But there's no, you know, if we want to keep that residential, because right now, given a business district, somebody could knock the, people aren't going to knock them down, but somebody could put them down. So. And do we want to keep it as residential, you know, are one of the issues that we're going to be looking at. So again, reflecting, you know, we've got two areas that are technically business districts that are going up. One is already residential, and one is being built out now as residential. We can keep it as a business commercial district, but do we want to make our zoning map consistent with what is actually there. We're not going to look at that right away. We've got to deal with the 160D issues right now before we even get on and talk about that issue.
Well, I think that's a good plan.
Okay.
We should get that fixed.
We got it on the agenda for in June to see where we stand with everything else.
All right.
But I think those are the only things that we have pressing right now.
Okay, thank you. Shoreline Access. Dennis, do you happen to be on?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we sure can. Thank
Hello.
You. Yep.
Okay, great. The committee is currently working on beach signage. This would be signs that are facing the ocean, primarily to update signs that are missing, but more importantly, as I think mentioned last month, we're looking to increase the awareness of our visitors and residents as to where they're located on the beach in case of emergency. So we'll be looking at plans to find a way in which we can locate people quickly, and that can be communicated to emergency services. So we are working with the police chief and the fire chief and whatever else we have to do to make sure that we're in compliance and everybody's happy with the signage package that we put in place for the next season.
Like on the north end, Atlantic Avenue, there's a few beach accesses with really no designation at all. So if someone can say, hey, I'm in trouble, I'm north of the pier, those accesses will be labeled, you know, one, two, three, whatever, and Chief Kennedy and Chief Bowden gave us some feedback on it. So they can say, I can see a sign, I'm at beach mm-hmm. access three. So we can, you know, we don't have people sure. running up and down in that area trying to locate someone in distress.
Greg, I have a question. John Bassett, are property owners required to put their address on the beach side of their, on the private access?
No, sir.
Hmm. I'm just thinking from the standpoint of location of where, you know, if they see a, I guess they could give it, if the property owner is calling in, we know from the street side to get there, so.
Thank you, Dennis.
Well, one other point, Dennis. I guess when we get through this current emergency situation, we get things ready, we may want to, because I don't think we ever came to a conclusion on sponsorship for cleanliness areas of the beach and things like that we talked about over a year ago, I guess.
Yeah, that's still in the works at this point. We're getting very close to having a plan in place.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
All right.
All right. Thank you. Stormwater Committee.
Yeah, so we met again this past month. All of the permittee owners for ponds are working on gathering information to submit to Public Works, so we have them on file. We have not heard anything back from the state. We responded to their audit in September with our plan, and we don't know when we're going to hear back from them. As soon as we have that, then we'll come to council with, here's what the plan requires changes for, some recommended changes to the stormwater ordinance. But until they accept our plan, we're not going to do that. And then we have on new business to talk about other stormwater stuff, so that's all I got
for okay.
the stormwater committee.
All right. Department head business? Administration?
I don't have any updates.
All right. Building inspections, John.
No updates, sir.
Okay, thank you, John. Finance department?
None,
thank you. Fire department?
Ed had to run to the fire department. There's an issue, but he said he had no updates.
By no updates, all of you have submitted your reports, and they all have good information. So I don't want people to think that there's nothing going on, there's a lot going on. Police department, Mike?
No updates.
No? Okay. Public Works?
Jimmy's out today. The only issue is, and Arlen's not here to help with how much we didn't spend, but we wrapped up the water meter project, and it was under budget. I'm not sure if finance knows exactly how much under budget, but it was a bit under budget, which is a good thing.
That's outstanding.
He'll tell us in the next meeting. Or
so Arlen, right. Did you get a software with that money?
Maybe. Well, it's different money, right? Because we took a loan for that, so we just won't execute all the loan.
It's actually all working quite well.
Yeah.
Recreation. Nikki.
No updates this month.
Okay. One question, Nikki. How did the parade go? I mean, I was here to see it launched, and there was a lot of folks, really excited children outside.
There were quite a few participants, and it seemed like it was very well received. So I think it went well for the community.
Okay. According to Governor's 181, people were more than 6 feet apart between the between each of the golf carts.
Correct. Most of the drivers were wearing masks.
Yeah, most of the drivers. Oh, did you see them? Yeah, a lot of them were. We made them wear masks here at the collection area.
Yep.
So
Majority of them.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Nice job on that, Nikki. I think the town enjoyed it.
Mayor, for good, the food drive is still going to Friday next week?
Yeah, that's a good point.
The food drive goes through this Friday. So the toy drive ended last Friday. We raised $600 and a really large amount of toys. And the food drive is ongoing through this Friday. We have $2,000 in cash donations and a decent amount of food. But we have 4 more days.
Did we send that out via the text messaging as well?
not the text message.
Can we do that tomorrow to let them know they have 4 days? Because a lot of people want to know. Great job, by the way.
Yeah.
Good time for the season.
You know, to the people of Curry Beach who are on the phone, and there probably are not a lot on the phone, I just wanted to let you know that we are proud of the way that Curry Beach responds to helping the other people on this island, and we hope you can continue that, and please, please let your neighbors know how gracious you have been. Thank you, Nikki.
Sure.
And don't stop. Okay, moving to old business and discussion of the Curry Beach section of the Island Greenway system.
And Mo's going to do that.
Okay. Is Mo here?
Yes.
Hello, Mo.
She is.
Hello, Mayor Blazinski, commissioners. Do I keep this on while I'm speaking?
While you're addressing, you could actually remove that. You're not close to anybody right now.
Last month, Commissioner Ellen led an invocation desiring help in the spirit of joy and enthusiasm to work together and reach higher and farther for the citizens of Curry Beach. I just want to go on record that it's in that spirit that this committee is dedicated to create safe movement for all travelers through our town. And I just start with that, preface with that, because of the calls that came in during our committee meeting on last Monday, because some of the residents had no idea about our committee. Tonight, I have two things to go over with you. First, the results of the community input regarding the Curry Beach Island Greenway extension as a bike route through our town. And second, a tremendous opportunity for our town. When you appointed me to the WMPO BPAC, I had no idea the learning curve ahead of me. In November 2019, when I attended the Bike Walk MC Summit, I was introduced to experts across our state and country sharing their knowledge and experience. And my question was, how do we get funding? And I was told, you have to start with a plan. I did not understand what that meant. So even through COVID restrictions, this committee has worked steadily on completing a professional walk audit, pointing out safety concerns in town for people walking and people on bikes. We also consider travelers using other forms of active transportation, like wheelchairs, skateboards, and babies and strollers. Getting travelers off of Fort Fisher through the business district till about E Avenue, where the on-street parking stops and there are dedicated bike lanes striped on 421, is a little safer for people on bikes to share the road with motorists. Last month, we approached you to connect to the Carolina Beach Island Greenway system, creating a bike route through the neighborhoods to get these travelers off of Fort Fisher Boulevard. As Commissioner Hegler and the police department confirmed that all of the bicycle accidents in our town have happened on Fort Fisher, with a recent one where one person on a bike was transported to the hospital. You all thought that this low-cost educational tool and resource for visitors creating a safer route for recreation and transportation was a great idea, and we put the idea of a bike route out to the community to get input. I know you are anxious to hear how the community responded to our suggested route. We received over 100 responses. Some we classed as neutral because they were asking questions, so they could actually go either way. Matt Zacharuda culminated the responses to the emails, and it sounds like we have everything across the board, from absolutely not, especially in my neighborhood, to need more information, to love the idea, to we want more like Carolina Beach has in their greenway system, off-road in nature. He put them on an Excel spreadsheet to see easily. And I actually did make an Excel spreadsheet for Etiquette here. 34, well, as you look at that spreadsheet, what you're going to see first is that 54 were opposed.
Did you get another one?
Oh, there you are, sir. I apologize. Good job.
But I wrote that down. 20 of them were opposed to the route we suggested because they didn't just want a route. They wanted a bike path. But most of the ones that were the 34 that were opposed are actually on the route. And you can see a little bit of their comments that Matt put on there for you. 15 were opposed to bike route sharing the road with cars, but they wanted the greenway, as in Carolina Beach, extended through our town. Commissioner Joseph Whitley has made it clear that this was not the intent. We were addressing safety issues, getting the non-motorized travelers off of Fort Fisher. Some were definitely in support of the proposal, as stated. Let's see, how many were there? 35 actually combined. But the problem again is, some of them were thinking it was definitely an off-road path. We've also had residents from south of Kay requesting a safer route for their families to get to the Carolina Beach Island Greenway. And Commissioner Hegler, that was one of the reasons that I was suggesting we have only one crossing on Kay Avenue, because I do foresee a crossing signal needed in the future. Mandy told me that at one time she had looked into the cost. This committee was trying to make a suggestion that was little cost for our town, maybe $2,000 for signage and marketing materials, and really does nothing different but gets walkers and leisure bikers and babies and strollers off of Fort Fisher through the business district, where it is extremely dangerous without bike lanes or adequate sidewalks. So, where does that leave us? As the Curry Beach representative to the WMPO, I reached out for assistance to our county, and this was their recommendation. This might sound familiar. We need a comprehensive bike and pedestrian plan for our town, and that's exactly what they told me a year ago in Winston-Salem. I recently saw the one that Carolina Beach had prepared several years ago, and it's a notebook about 2 inches thick, addresses everything you could possibly imagine on the subject. And you can actually go and look at them if you go to WMPO.org and go to plans. All the different towns have their plans on that website. Good news, bad news, good news. The good news is that this type of plan is a publicly vetted plan. So everyone who wants to be can be part of the planning process. The bad news is this plan would cost approximately $25,000 to $30,000 for our size of a town. The really good news is that there are three options to pay this fee. One, the town pays from our coffers. Two, the town applies to NCDOT for a planning grant, and they would match 90% with our town paying 10%. And because we are a small community, we can do a combined bike-ped plan instead of having to do two separate, like you'll see if you look at Carolina Beach has two separate. Even though NCDOT is in a cash crunch right now with lower gas taxes coming in from COVID stay-at-homers, they do have over $1 billion set for this type of expenditure. WMPO advised that they foresee this being available in late winter or spring. Now the really, really good news. We submitted a letter expressing interest of our bike ped needs to WMPO. And since we are current with our member dues, and our Commissioner Ellen sits on this board, and if they approve our request, they will pay 100% for this plan. So our town will pay nothing, nada, zero. $30,000, that costs us zero. I'm sure all of our neighbors' questions, fears, desires will be addressed if we can have a plan put together. There are no guarantees that we will receive this grant, but I say it's worth a try. Hopefully, all residents will be satisfied that their voices will be heard. If we are not accepted for the 100% grant, then we go for the 90-10 through MCDOT. With their complete streets policy adopted in 2019, they want to create safety on the roads for all travelers. This will also address the concerns we have as the results of the walk audit, and we have a PowerPoint presentation that we could do next month if you like. It was interesting that many of the areas we zeroed in on to prioritize for safety were also mentioned in the comments from our residents. Do you have any questions I can answer?
I would like to see that next month.
Gotcha.
Rest of you agree with that? To say the walk audit, I think that's going to tell us a lot of things about this, getting across streets. And
this committee is working so hard to...
I know they are. And they are running into people. And that's okay, because that's what this is about. People.
Yeah, and we have such a wide variety of talented, different talents. Our committee members are all different and have their own thing they bring to the table. So it's refreshing to see people that care as much as they do about the committee and work as hard as they do.
Look.
And the chairman doing a really good job too.
I agree with you 100%. This town is blessed. We have fantastic leaders on our committees and fantastic people who support the efforts that are, you know, to improve this town. You can look at any one of our leaders, and Mo, you're doing a fine job on this, and we'll support you in any way we can. That letter, I believe our letter went out.
And it was received.
Right. So, and John? You are a voting member of the WMPO, but I mean, I guess...
Oh, yeah, I am a voting member of the WMPO.
But I don't... Hopefully you don't have to recuse from that particular vote, but...
I support trying to request the 100% grant.
Yes.
That doesn't automatically mean I support the 90% grant.
Right.
Go for the 100. If we don't get it, let's talk again. Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm sure you're persuasive, John. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, one final comment. We heard the residents loud and clear, and we really appreciate their responding to our email request and calling in at our meeting. They're very enthusiastic about the bike route going through their neighborhood, and we heard it loud and clear. We have to look at, that might be the best way to go, but we need to study it a little bit more. That's why we need to do this plan.
I mean, when it comes down to it, Mo, you have to consider what the citizens want, what the need is, and what the costs are. And they may not always meet. So, but
well,
we realize
looking
that.
Looking at the responses, what the citizens want
right.
is probably not going to happen now. However, when we talked about this last month, we talked about maybe making more than one path, you know, maybe not do Settlers, maybe take it over Sloop Point or take it down 4th or 5th or, you know, so I'm not sure if that's where you want us to proceed or just hold off down next month, then.
I don't want you to stop thinking about this. I don't want the committee to stop thinking about what the best approach may be. If you have an approach that you believe in and you want to fight for, then bring that one forward. If you have an alternate approach, or the alternate approach is more than one path, bring that forward. What you and the committee, who are putting your sweat, your blood, and your time into, not just your opinions, you're putting education and hard work and trying to gather all the comments you can. So you will be in a position to at least offer counsel something that makes sense from your view, and you will be able to articulate why that makes particularly the best sense. And then we can react from that point forward. But a lot of brain power on that crew. You have a good committee there, and you're a good leader, and we have faith in where you're going to take us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. We're looking at a lot of different options. So when we present the WAC audit, we'll give you not only what we're thinking, but why. And I guess take it from there. But, my fingers are crossed about a grant like this, because they will do the extreme due diligence that our residents want from us.
Yes. Good. Okay. You've gotten us this far. We need to see what we can do to get further. Maybe we can get the cash. Let's hope so.
The cash is always good.
Thank you, Mo.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mo before she leaves?
What does it mean when they say support Keys approach?
Keys as an HOA and Beachwalk as HOAs send out an email blast to their residents telling them how to respond, which was against it, so it wouldn't go on Settlers Land. So when that says supports Keys approach.
And the final numbers were 54 against, 35 in favor.
No, that's misleading. 50 of the 54, 20 of those were against it because they wanted to see it as a bike path, right, not as a bike route.
Okay.
So when I was saying what the people really want isn't going to happen, is the majority of the people that responded to that really want to see a designated off-road bike path.
So I was reading all the comments on here.
Mm-hmm. And even though we have sent out notes on the cost, I thought you did a good job. We may need to send that out again, Joe, so people understand.
And we've made that very clear.
Yeah.
Behind the
Settlers?
Yes.
Monty?
No, yes. And I'm not talking about, I'm just talking about the crossing the swamp, 3.5 miles of fence, a large area that would have to be boardwalk, and the cost associated with that, I'm not sure that the town would be willing to dive into that.
Well, it's the same people that don't want it riding down the street in front of their houses certainly aren't going to want it behind their houses. That was very strong when it came up.
No, that's not true. Judy Lair, who was opposed to it being behind her house, said to me a Saturday ago, that she didn't see why any of her neighbors wouldn't want it to be on Settlers Lane in front of the house. But then all of a sudden, when these email blasts went out from the HOA, and she listened to the Zoom meeting with our committee, she was scared the fact that we might have a comprehensive plan, because that might bring up an opportunity to take down trees behind her house. And she was also, there was also a lot of confusion because people see what Matsu is doing behind the houses. So they were thinking, oh, they're clearing that for a bike path.
That's what I said.
So that's a lot of confusion.
That's what I said. The same people that just told you they didn't want it on the road in front of their house would be even more vocal if it was going to be behind their house. Which is what the council got the last time this came up.
Okay, but if you read some of those comments, there are people on Settlers that don't want it in front of their house. They want it behind their house.
Okay, I'm sure there are. So there are people that want everything, but the ones that you're going to hear about, go tell them, I'll put a sign up if you want. We're going to put a bike path behind your house, and here's the number to call, and then call you. Because they called me last time. So I'm just telling you that if you think it was vocal about being on the street in front of the house, put it behind this house, and you're going to get a lot more feedback from the ones that you did.
We're not really having that discussion.
I know.
We're just trying to get travelers through our town in a safe manner.
Right.
Yep. Okay. Any other comments for Mo? Any other comments, Mo? From you?
That's it.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Let us know we can help. Okay, new business. Employee recognition. Mr. Hagler.
Yes, so for the council, you saw some emails back and forth between me and Arlen. So kind of the history, a number of commercial entities and other towns have recognized the challenges that their employees have had for the last year with COVID. And I would definitely say that our challenge has been a little more potentially if you think about it. So we have multiple towns throughout the country that are having 20 or 30% sales tax revenue impacts due to COVID. Ours is 2%. If you looked at what happened this year, the occupancy rates of the room occupancy tax has not came out yet, but it looks like it's gonna meet or exceed the previous years. And if you were around the town through the summer, once we lifted the closures of all of the room occupancies, basically they all filled up and they were full through the summer. So while many towns' employees experienced kind of a lull during this time period, ours obviously saw what we all saw, which was the town was basically full all summer long. Throughout that time, they maintained the services and standards of service that the citizens expect, and they just rolled with all the issues, right? Whether it was masks, whether it's dealing with different 911 issues, dealing with all the people that were stressed. And I went to some of the calls with both the police and the fire, and definitely there was a lot of stress. So, and then looking at what Arlen's saying, so his estimate on the sales revenue tax over our budget for the year, if you reviewed his email, he believes that we're going to get $158,500 over our budget based on what we've seen to this month. So I asked him to research, what if we gave our full-time employees a $500 bonus for their COVID and Hurricane Isaias, or however you say it, performance this year? And so in the email to council, he showed that would be an impact of basically $31,000. And then multiple commissioners asked questions about part-timers and volunteers. And there was discussions about volunteers. If you do payment, that could impact how they are classified. So he recommended not doing a cash incentive for volunteers. And I kind of agree with him. So talked with the police chief, the fire chief, I'm sorry, which the majority of the volunteers are. And kind of we agreed that if council, as part of the recognition, gave him $100 per employee budget, he would work something out to recognize their efforts. So that takes care of the volunteers. And then the last are our four part-time employees that work over 1,000 hours in 2020. And so Arlen just basically looked at the financial impact of doing a $250 payment or $100 payment. So my recommendation to council, if you're interested, and I'll be glad to make the motion after discussion, is that we recognize those four people at $250, which is half of the full-time rate. And the budget impact of all of that I've just talked about would be basically $35,000. And so that still leaves on the sales tax that was not budgeted over $100,000, which I think council would then look at designating for the financial software that we cut out of the budget. So I'm open for discussion, and then I'll make a motion, but I don't want to make it without council asking questions.
Mandy, each year in the past, we have provided Christmas, and what we had done in the past with the Christmas gifts. And there was a standard that we normally applied to that particular activity.
Well, I mean, it's kind of varied each year. Usually we have a luncheon, which I still plan to do in the spring. So I don't want to take away from that because we canceled it this year due to COVID. I really want to do it in the spring when we can do it outside, put up some tents, spread out, and appreciate our employees. That way I don't want them to think that I'm going to not do it for them. In lieu of the gift this year, we have a whole day off instead of a half day.
Okay.
Looking at my employee appreciation budget, I still was planning to do something small as a token. Thank you for coming, that kind of thing. So. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where I'm at in my budget for that. I have not accounted for any of this. This would be a budget amendment.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But like I said, I haven't canceled my luncheon, so mm-hmm. I still want to hold that in my budget.
Okay. Thank you. Any other thoughts from other commissioners?
I support David's activity plan, the idea, the concept.
Okay.
Yeah, I do. I like the idea of her taking care of the park company.
I think it's been a tough year. Well deserved and earned.
Well, I think we all agree that they've all done a fantastic job during this period of time, and we have not had complaints. Not that I'm looking for complaints, but people who are not happy usually do not hesitate to inform us accordingly. So it does not appear like there is any resistance at this point in time. So, David, yeah. I would accept
your motion. So I'd make a motion to recognize the employee's performance for a budget amendment to support a $500 net payment to full-time employees, a $250 net payment to part-time employees, and a budget of $100 for volunteer to the departments that have volunteers. Sum total of $35,000 on the spending side, and then to recognize this on the financial side, sales tax, increase in sales tax revenue that needs to be recognized. So that's where it would come from.
I'll second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. And I did have another thought, and it is, do we wish to give the department heads the discretion to, we have some people who may have just come on board in the last month or the last 2 months, as opposed to people who have maybe worked the entire year under that circumstance. Do we want to give the discretion, or do we want to give guidance, or does everybody get the same thing?
My recommendation, we should treat all our employees the same. We want to recognize them all, even the newcomers, because they're going to get their turn over the next 6 months, for sure. Okay. And I made it all the same, as opposed to ratioing it by pay or anything like that, because the risk is the same for every employee. Okay. At least that's my rationale.
Okay. All right, we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
Did you understand that, finance?
I did. Good. And I actually have budget amendments prepared. So we'll get those signed. You can leave them with me. So the other thing is are we going to do a motion to allocate the rest of the sales and use tax? Are you going to do that tonight for the finance software, or are you going to do that later?
I would wait until Arlen asked for it in January. No, he didn't know about the other one, so.
Oh, okay.
That's why he's got to recommend it to council, but that's where council was leaning at the end of last budget year when we cut it out.
Okay.
Is if things were better. Yeah. And I just reminded council, but Arlen may say something different.
Okay. And just to be clear, do we want that included?
Let's see if.
I'm sorry. Yes. before the end of the year if possible.
On the December 3rd?
Yes.
My motion was intended to add.
Discussion of New Hanover County regulation for smoking vaping.
Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, Mandy and Beth and Meredith and I met with the on the Zoom call about the new smoking regulations. They refer to them as rules. Mandy, can we put that up on the screen, please? And we'll be glad to share this PowerPoint with you if you want it.
Sorry, I must have accidentally closed it. Let me reopen it.
We asked a question of the health department. Do we need to have our own ordinance, or do we need to adopt anything? And basically the answer was no, that the county health department has the rights and the authority to regulate these rules. And it restricts the use of smoking and e-cigarettes in New Hanover County. And I'm not going to go through each slide, but man, just go to the slide about what they can and cannot do. I mean, a lot does have to do with the health of the citizens, secondhand smoke. And basically here are what people can do and where they can smoke and vape and where they can't. As you see, it says towns and county city buildings, vehicles, grounds, except for where it's expressly permitted, which that means say coming up with a designated smoking area for employees or something like that. As you say, public transportation, child care, this goes into effect February 1. Mandy and her staff have looked at other communities or other towns that have this addressed already in their personnel ordinances or everything, and I think most of them do. Did you find anybody did not?
I mean, well, we searched the listserv. So what we found is we got policies for, like, Carolina Beach. We got a policy from Leland, Oak Island, and Wrightsville Beach. They range from literally, like, a couple of sentences to 2 pages long. And I do have copies for everyone. I can share those with you.
Now, I did fail to say that this is not about prosecution or writing tickets. It's more about education, and they are they know it's hard to enforce, but they're trying their best to get more people to quit smoking, and there helps us with secondhand smoke and other issues. Also, too, if you don't see on here anything about beaches, it was asked, and it's in their information they sent out, that this beaches are state maintained, so that does not apply to the wet area of the beach strand. So I guess our question to council is, you know, do you want staff to move forward with coming up with something in our personnel ordinance to help us with this, or do we want to just go with it? I mean, we're going to have to designate smoking areas, and we're going to educate our employees about smoking in town meeting.
Well, so I think we're going to definitely need a policy, right? Because the department heads are going to need to be able to point to something this council did when they're enforcing it. Because it's going to be a big change for some of our employees. Over half the public works department smoke.
And they smoke in vehicles.
Right. So that's the first thing. And then second, I assume with our health care, we already offer smoking cessation. So we should, just like what The health department said this was purposed for, because I read it off the internet, Alan, that when it first came out, that, you know, the whole purpose is to encourage people to stop smoking. Well, we should reinvigorate that by reminding our employees that there are smoking cessation plans paid for by our health care already, and they should make themselves available, right?
Well, personally, I think we need more. Well, I'm gonna let Mandy explain what an employee has to do for the smoking plan.
So basically, under the state health plan, in order to qualify for the premium discount, you have to agree to go to a smoking cessation visit with either your primary care doctor or the CVS MinuteClinic. Currently, all of our employees that smoke sign up for that.
Of course they do.
Every year.
Every year, yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, it's addiction for a reason, right? Everyone's participating in the visits, because if they don't participate, it's reported back to the state health plan, and they will come back and they will penalize them with that billing. And it's happened in years past, but now we have 100% that attend.
Right.
But where it goes from there is where it goes. so we can definitely send out more educational material. We can, you know, push it a few times a year or several times a year or monthly. We can send out that memo of it's important to remember and, you know, all of that. We can put it on our schedule to do and send out as much educational material as we can get, because the county has passed this and it affects us, so we have to comply at this point with town property, town vehicles, town buildings, things like that. One thing Alan pointed out to me that I didn't think of, because in my mind when we were sitting through this presentation with the county, I was like, well, so does that mean that, because I don't want to penalize anybody. It's a free country. If you choose to smoke, you choose to smoke.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it is. And I'm not going to tell anyone they can't or they can, or I'm not comfortable with that as your personnel officer. I have a good relationship with our employees, and I'd like to keep it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, but one thing Alan pointed out to me is that when they're out and about in town, in my mind, I was thinking, well, if they want to smoke a cigarette, are they going to have to drive all the way back to Public Works to their designated area to smoke? But Alan was saying, like, their designated area as they're out and about on a job is back to their vehicle. Outside of the vehicle, not in the vehicle, but back to the vehicle. So it's not like they're being penalized, well, I got to go take a 15-minute break because I want a cigarette. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I would just base that on what?
Other towns
that I had worked in. That's how we handled employees who didn't, let's say for example we had a policeman or a fireman or somebody here in town hall that smoked. We can very easily have a designated smoking area for them to go to, which most towns do. But Public Works is the one that make or any type of maintenance workers in our town, it makes it very difficult. So we could have a designated area, could be their work vehicle.
Outside or inside?
Outside.
It has to be outside the vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what's different about this is that they've incorporated vaping. Vaping was not included prior. So it's important. We do have some that vape.
Right.
That are not on Public Works, that are in other departments.
Yep.
So,
and it's proven that secondhand vapors, or whatever you want to call it, is harmful for people like secondhand smoke.
Yeah.
No. I mean, I'm supportive, right? So, I mean, smoking killed my mom, and it contributed to my dad's passing away, and probably didn't help other members of my family. So, I'm supportive, but I do recognize that we've had a hard time hiring the last two Public Works personnel, and half of our Public Works department smoke. So if we lose a bunch of employees over a policy that is, you know, okay, yeah, they're already getting penalized financially, and health-wise, but this is America. I agree with Mandy on that. I just want to make sure we make a smart policy. We have to follow what the county health department says, so we just got to find the middle ground and walk it. And I like that. I've never heard that beside your public vehicle could be fined, but that solves a lot of the problem, I think. I was worried when I first read this.
Well, and I'll do a little more research, David. And, you know, maybe this is something that we look at during the budget season and possibility do a more extensive program for our smokers to get them to quit. It may have some rewards to it. It's going to be harder than just going to one class at CVS.
Oh, no.
It's an incentive plan.
Yeah.
Is council contemplating whatever policy ends up being in written form and inserted into the personnel policy?
That's where I think it goes. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, and me too. That was going to be my request.
I'd like to suggest that we you know, Mayor, you have a department head meeting. Let's discuss it and let's
right.
see what we can do to let it be their plan, not something we're forcing down the throat.
My personal opinion is this is good information, but in all honesty, people who smoke know it is wrong to smoke. People who smoke, I don't think, generally smoke around others. Hopefully they don't anymore. But there's a lot of things we shouldn't do that people are allowed to do. I get sketchy on taking things away from folks that are personal choices. People can carry weapons, people can do all kinds of things, but they can't smoke cigarette. So, not that I want to smell it, because I don't, but I don't know where we have a place to step here. Counselor?
I'm not sure. I don't fully understand your comments, but there is a need to comply and to
That's sure right.
comply.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean...
Well, the comment was, I don't like it, but
right,
we have to do it.
Yeah, I think my perspective is, I agree with Alan's input. You know, Mr. Mayor, if you and Alan can talk with the department heads and work with Mandy, we have five policies that are, you know, to look at as criteria, or I mean, you know, as models, pick the best one or make a better one than that, and then we can adopt it at the January meeting so we're in compliance. And then if we need to add some stuff, because it shows a county, town, and city grounds except where expressly permitted, so we need to figure out where those are and document them so that people know, right? And then we need to train our employees to comply to that. It's not saying you can't smoke everywhere. You got to go to the designated area, which Corning in Wilmington, where I work, they just said no tobacco at all just this month. We've had smoking areas because I was a maintenance guy there a long time and I hated having to deal with them, but we had smoking areas for the last 15 or 20 years, but this month they just went tobacco free at the facility.
They eliminated the smoking areas?
And vape. Nowhere on the property. So, I mean, places continue to do that. It sounds like council doesn't want to go that far, but I think I agree with the attorney. We have to comply with the health department. That's our job. There are some expressly admitted permitted up there. We have to figure out where those are going to be. Right.
So what is the penalty?
I don't know. What is enforcement under this thing?
What's the penalty?
Back to
the next one.
Civil penalty?
Yeah,
sure. Thank you.
For the general public. That would not be an employee's penalty.
Right. We're just setting up personnel policy.
Right.
No, what do you mean that's for the general public but not an employee's penalty?
Well, that would be the employee, yes. I mean,
or the general public. It'd be either one, right?
Are you contemplating
charging our employees a $50 penalty?
Well, no, I'm saying they could be.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm saying we're going to. I think you, but you could be. The enforcement is for everybody, not just town employees.
Yeah.
My
That's fine. Do you want to address that in the personnel policy or just leave it as is since the county, since that enforcement provision is applicable to this municipality and for our purposes, simply put in the personnel policy what's required and if that is violated, you go your normal personnel policy disciplinary.
That's right. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, so I guess the counties decide how they're going to enforce this, maybe. I didn't see that in any of this stuff online. Maybe you guys heard it when you talked. Did anyone ask that question?
They said it was going to be more education than enforcement.
More education and enforcement, but I think as far as incorporating it into our personnel policy on an employee side of things, I think we need to follow our policy.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not to have the police come out and write a $50 penalty.
So I guess
that's on the first violation.
I guess the statute, we should find that just so we know it. But
because
I agree
then
with you.
We get a violation too.
And every single, every new cigarette that occurring.
Third violation for our facilities, $200.
Well, at least they get three.
So we'll pay ourselves.
They well, get I don't three. Think that comes to us though.
No. Yeah, if you have the magic language, it does.
For our facility. I'm just saying, for us on the employee side of the thing, I would like to follow our policy.
Yeah.
No, exactly right. No, no.
I think you have a consensus on that.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll be putting together several versions to send out.
Yeah.
I want to keep it simple. Okay. I don't want a four-page policy.
Please, please do, Mandy. So keep it as simple as you can.
It's going to be pretty simple. Okay.
It mentioned about the public parks and stuff, so do we need to designate
a small area? The department heads need to talk about it if you want more or not.
Yeah. We probably need the signage and stuff like that. We'll probably have to.
Yeah.
Taken care of in the county rule. We probably going to do some education, just some signage and that type of thing.
Signage saying parking, smoking area or no
smoking area?
So there's some signage.
I support that 100%.
Yeah, I think the county will provide us some signage.
Yeah, there's some signage we can get through the county to post.
But we could go
well, Nikki's question was...
No smoking in parks, or are we designated?
I think the at the department head meeting with Arlen and Craig, you guys should talk about that, right? Because Jimmy will have an opinion about dealing with the cigarette butt, and you'll have an opinion about what you know out there, and the department heads, you guys can make a recommendation to council.
Is the question about whether you can smoke in the park?
No. Whether we're going to put a designated area in the park.
Yeah, or be no smoking.
Because it allows us to do either.
Yeah, I didn't. That's what I was kind of.
That's not.
I didn't recall that part of the list, but that, if you all understand that, then I understand.
Yeah, it said it. Unless it's expressly posted, you're allowed to do that.
And I can send out the presentation from the county to all the department heads too.
Yep.
Okay. Reschedule the council meeting due to Martin Luther King holiday in January.
I'm not asking for favors, but I do have a down the board meeting on Tuesday the 19th.
Okay, Tuesday the 19th.
And I would
say we should
Monday
put it out.
Or Friday. How about the 11th?
The 11th is good for me.
Could be later. Could be.
It could be the 25th, but either one. I just prefer a Monday or Friday because I'm traveling 11. For the next 4 months.
What day will we talk
inputs, about? Gentlemen? Where? We have an 11th. Noted. A 19th is out. And we want Monday or Friday. So.
The 11th or the 25th, whichever you guys prefer, would be my best.
11th or the 25th.
I can move it.
Reschedule.
Yeah, I'll move it.
What would be better?
I'm good on the 11th.
11th or the 25th?
Are you okay on the 25th, Counselor?
I believe so. Let me check real quickly, please.
David, you were fine rescheduling?
Either one, 25th or the 11th, either one.
We need to get the parking materials ready, and we're...
So the 25th will help you?
Okay. I'm okay on the 25th.
You're okay on the
25th? Thank you for taking me in.
Joseph, you want to have parking ready for the 11th?
That may be...
Tight?
Yeah, do the 25th. That's fine.
Okay. 25th would be better for us.
Make a motion we reschedule the January meeting from January 18th to January 25th.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay.
30 minutes before, sir.
Yep.
So you'll need to reschedule your stormwater.
Now, we can always, if a meeting's necessary. Wait, the governor's order is over on the 11th?
Yeah.
Well, we can call for a meeting if something changes. We can call for a
meeting. It'll depend what he says. If he says it's the same, we don't need to meet, but okay. Schedule date and time for the 2020 annual council retreat.
Again, I apologize. I've got conflicts on Fridays, but that date in the middle is okay.
So Monday the 1st would be best for you?
Yeah,
February 1st?
Well, that's fine.
So, and I'm not familiar. Mandy says it's a daytime thing.
Mm-hmm.
9
to 5.
Yeah. Monday works for me. Thank you.
Alan, the bike ped will need to be rescheduled.
We can do that. If we're going to meet on the 20th, we have a council meeting on the 25th, we're not going to want to meet. So we can fix that.
Okay.
That's not a problem.
Let's make it, well, how about a motion for the 1st?
I make a motion that we have our council retreat on February the 1st, beginning at 9 a.m., hopefully completing by 5 p.m.
Or sooner.
Or sooner.
Y'all made records and gotten us out at 3.
That's right.
I have a motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Moving on to 10.5, Mr. Hagler.
Yep. So, Mandy, if you can pull up. So we've been working back and forth between Matsu and us on can we do something behind Settlers Lane. We've also, Jimmy, reached out to the state and asked them about permitting. And after we got that information, we talked with LESI about what we think we need to give Matsu so they can tell us if they'll approve it or not. And our understanding, I don't know if she can make that bigger. It was just the pricing part, wherever that is. Our understanding of what we need is the pre-permit from the state, which they won't give us until Matsu says we can do it on land, but an engineering drawing to Matsu showing what we want to do. And if you look at the survey, which we did with LESI and Jimmy last week, mm-hmm. Basically there's a peak that happens about 900 feet down. There's a ridge, and the water drops to the north on one side, and then would come the way we wanted to go to K Avenue on the other side. So we wouldn't go all the way to the water tower like we talked because of the survey.
Okay.
But we would get an engineering drawing on the first cost. I don't think
so. Best case, it would just be two pieces.
There's another page.
No, the one that said, the first item says $7,000.
From the ridge to K, then on the other side of the ridge, that would go to the water.
On the other side of
the
ridge.
That's right.
You'll
down
need
the
road,
it
on the other side of the ridge.
Yeah.
Yes. But, so for the first part of this, if we find it, I don't think this is the rest.
Yep, that's the right one.
I don't know if it is or not now. Anyway, $7,000. I would request permission from council to work with LDSI and the attorney to get the contract right so we can then poll the council and approve exempting this project to get the first phase. This is not the right one.
That's the
actual contract from all of the stormwater stuff. There was an addendum just for Settlers.
Okay, there was an addendum, and I have a letter about that.
That's fine. For council, what I'm asking for is permission to work with the attorney and LDSI to get a contract to meet Matsu's requirements so we can submit drawings to Matsu to see if they'll approve the project. That's only $7,000, but as the attorney pointed out, we have to modify their proposal to just that portion.
Yeah, that's, if I could comment, yep. This is the first time I've seen this one. I was working on a $47,000.
Yeah, that's something.
That's the right one. No, that's the right one. The $47,000 is the right one. But the very first line item is the part that we need to do out of it.
And my point is just very simple, and it's redundant because I said it earlier. What I see here is $7,000 is part of a bigger contract that doesn't fit within the exemption authorization. So if I was doing it, I would carve out that $7,000, make it simple, put it in a proposal or whatever, but put that $7,000 into its own agreement framework.
Exactly right. So I'm requesting permission from council to work with LDSI to do what the attorney just directed us to do, so that we can then send it to him. He will then do the exemption, because we've worked with LDSI and they already have the information. That's why we're exempting, because it will be cheaper. And then we will get the drawings that then Commissioner Whitley can refer to Matsu, hopefully in mid to late January, to see if they're still in amenable to us putting a 18-inch pipe back there to try to help with the water issue that citizens are complaining about on Sutler's Lane.
So the $7,000 is a preliminary to the rest of the $47,000?
Maybe, because Matsu may not require... The issue is Matsu may only... If Matsu approves that and the state of North Carolina Stormwater Division says that's all on federal property, if Matsu approves it, you can do what you proposed, we won't need any more of that money because we won't need any more engineering.
Exactly.
But the reason that's so high is because they felt their proposal deals with all the permitting from the state. But if the state says that's all federal property and you're not guaranteeing anything other than you're going to let the water flow that where it would end up anyway, that's why it could be much cheaper.
I appreciate that.
LDSI thinks that's a possibility?
They do.
Right.
Well, the issue is the state and the feds sometimes just say, that's fine. And then sometimes they don't. And so we don't know where they are. And we won't know until we ask both of them. That's what we get. But the state won't talk about it until they say the owner of the property is approving you doing something.
So
we need a letter from Matsu to go with our drawings to the state.
So...
Love those guys. Love
so,
them all.
Gentlemen, what's your feeling on that? I think we need to proceed.
I was going to ask, because we did it a couple of years ago, and we've had conversations about the potential for the old pond back there to look at that. I was going to ask Matsu if anybody wanted to walk back there at some point, now that it's cooled off some, for a convenient Saturday for them, whenever they deem us being on their properties, okay? To walk it like we did a couple of years ago and just kind of get a lay of the land back there to see what has happened since Florence, and even potentially put an eye on all the ditches again.
I think you get us permission, Joe, and we'll figure out how to get back there. This becomes important whether it's groundwater or whether it's runoff. That pipe will be helpful. That's the only solution that could help on both conditions.
Well, it'll help with the road because
the road is taking a lot of
road in that left the west side of the road every time.
A lot of erosion there too. So
do I have council permission to work on this?
Yes.
And once the attorney and I work it out, can we poll council so we don't have to wait till the 25th of January?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
John?
Yes.
You agree? Alan?
I'm good. Yeah.
How about you, Joe?
I'm good.
You're in.
So I'll talk with LDSI tomorrow. We'll try to get you something by the end of the week, Mr. Attorney.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Are there any commissioner items that need to be brought up?
Not from me.
Not from me, sir.
Joe?
No, sir.
Okay. Well, then I guess I can accept another motion.
Make a motion, we adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Wow, this must be a triple line thing.
At least the longest December meeting.